Right now, I'm going to speak to a very, very charming man who is one of the main pillars of show business, one of the industry's nice, the old gentleman, the manager, the proper ones from the old days. And believe me, they're few and far between, who is a dear friend of Errol Brown and also looked after him. Hello, Phil Dale.
Hello, Pete. Bless you, mate. Bless you. A real kind of horrific day. I know you always say that about someone who passes because they're personal to you, but Errol was a very, very, very special man to me. I took over, some of your older listeners will understand this, but from a man called Mickey Most, and Mickey was a great friend of Errol's, but they decided that Mickey would carry on with the music side, the production side, and Errol needed a manager, and I kind of came into Errol's life. And Errol had been through the times of the early racial kind of stereotypes he had in those days, because we're all of an age, where he was one of the very first mixed race sort of bands. And he came through all of that. He was a gentleman. He was such a friend. But he's, to, obviously, I'm biased and upset, so forgive me. But Errol's tunes to me were wonderful. They will live on. They will be his legacy. And the funny thing is about, so forgive me for chatting on here, but six years ago, we had to go to LA on business. And Errol said, listen, when we get in, he said, I'm going to hire a Cadillac, because he wrote a song called Heaven's in the Backseat of My Cadillac. And we laughed. And we got off at LA airport and we got into this Cadillac. And I swear to God, this is not just one of those things you say because it sounds good. We're driving away and we're staying in Santa Monica, which is kind of like New Brighton to Liverpool. It's kind of that sort of distance. And we're driving away and he sort of bends down. He's driving to turn the radio on. And my word of honor, Everyone's Winner came on and we laughed. We looked at each other. And you couldn't have set it up. And Errol was just such a generous man. Very seldom did you go to anywhere in the world, especially in the world of gun stations now, in the era we're in now, where you don't hear a Hot Chocolate song. And the majority, not all, but the majority were written by Errol. And he was just such a gentleman and a sweet, sweet man. And when I got the news today, his wife had emailed me, because he lived in the UK. He came over from Jamaica as a young boy, totally and utterly from nothing, and came over in the early days, sort of grew up, fell into the industry, because he covered a John Lennon song, and he covered a John Lennon song, and everyone said, you can't do that. It's illegal to change lyrics. And he went in, and John Lennon loved it, albeit never kind of made it. They never released it, but John Lennon loved what he'd done with the song, which made Mickey Most come into Errol's life, and Errol then started to write. And obviously, you know, Your Sexy Thing being the greatest, Everyone's a Winner, it started with a kiss, and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And he was just prolific. A gentleman and generous with it. Sorry to talk on. Sorry.
No, talk away. I first met him through Mickey Most on New Faces. Yes. Mickey introduced me to him because he was on the panel when I was working on the show. Yeah. What I found about him was he was a very gentleman. You know, when you're in the presence of somebody gentle.
Yeah.
And he brought a calmness to the room.
Totally and utterly. He hated aggravation. He hated fights. He could never understand the kind of era that he came into when there was racial tensions. He could never understand it. And the funny thing about being Errol, and obviously we all know as we're all mature and understand, is he was an Englishman or a British man. He knew no boundaries, and neither should he. Mm. And he just totally and utterly loved the UK. He got into football. He loved football. His greatest joys in this order was, obviously his family life and his love for his family. Music, the great, and not because we're in talking to a Liverpool station, so please don't think I'm being condescending, but his greatest joy was the Beatles. He loved the Beatles. You very seldom went into his dressing room when he wasn't playing a Beatle track. And he just understood that. He said to me, the Beatles changed the world in the form of music. Everything changed. Elvis Presley was a wonderful and a god, but everything changed, and he understood that, and it gave him a kind of a force to want to start writing, which he did. And obviously, as I said, the tracks he's done will continue, just marvellous. But he was a generous man and a wonderful man.
Phil, what was he like away from music, like in Jamaica? Was he somebody who just chilled, or what was he like?
Well, he ended up living in the Bahamas, and the only reason he went there is that our UK kind of weather, and let's all be honest, we're all British citizens, and it is, we have a nice summer, but it's kind of 3 months at the best. Mm-hmm. And he kind of, being born in Jamaica, he kind of just felt that he needed heat, and he went to the Bahamas for all sorts of reasons, but he kept a home here. But he was soft, he was gentle, but he loved British culture. And he came from, as I say, from Jamaica, but nothing. I mean, genuinely, outside toilet, honestly and truthfully. But I don't mean outside like we all know from the old school, in the form of a little brick, very cold in the winter. I mean, literally, a hole in the ground with hand on heart. And he came over in the early days. His auntie brought him over because she wanted to better him. And he came through. He actually worked originally for the Treasury, the British Treasury, in London, but carried on. He knew he wasn't meant to be there, but he was quite bright. But as I say, the songwriting took over. Lovely man.
How long has he been ill?
He's been ill for about 10 months, but not ill that you didn't think he was going home. Yeah. And he always stayed at home. He went to hospital. He recently went to hospital, and he was going to come home. He, as I say earlier, he loved football and golf, ironically. And the last time I spoke to him, he said, and he always watched football. I mean, he watched football from hospital, everybody and anybody. He just adored football. But he was looking forward to also walking around a golf course for just the energy of burning off the energy and playing the game. But he was always coming home, always. He did do, which I did through a beautiful man, which you know, Peter, called Danny Bittesh, of Kennedy Street Enterprises in Manchester. He did do a farewell tour, but that was a farewell tour because he didn't want to be one of those people, and there's nothing wrong with it for those who do it, but he didn't want to be one of those people who went on forever and felt that he should keep churning it out. So he finished with a nice end and a full stop, but nevertheless missed it and carried on writing, albeit we didn't as such do anything with the new music you wrote.
When he was at the height of his career, how big was he?
Well, I'm biased, so I find it very hard to kind of, you know, out of 10, I in his day, I think Hot Chocolate were huge. And if you go to let me be old-fashioned and call it a disco, a nightclub, whatever the word is now, you will still at some point hear a Hot Chocolate song. And as I said earlier, you can't go anywhere in the world, and especially with gold stations being what they are now, and not hear one of Errol's songs. It's just impossible. From the film The Full Monty to whatever, somebody somewhere will play a Hot Chocolate song. You know, they just will. And he wrote the majority of the songs. Not all, but the majority.
Why do you think the songs worked? I mean, you're a music man yourself. You know the industry. Why do you think they worked?
Commercialism, just the fact that, you know, a song title of You Sexy Thing. And that came because when he met his wife, Jeanette, she sort of, like an old-fashioned girl, kept him at arm's length, and he was besotted by her and just found her a sexy thing. And he said to her one night, I just find you so sexy, you are a sexy thing. And he picked up on the title. It started with a kiss, really was, genuinely, from his words to me over a drink one night and a curry, is that he finally went to the cinema and the romance started with a kiss in the backseat of the movies. We've all been there. And it started with a kiss, was exactly that.
Do you know what I love about you? And I've said this before, but I'll say it again on air. You're from a different school. You managed the man, but you were friends. It wasn't about, yes, it was money, yes, it was business, but it's from the old school. That's how it worked. It was friendship and work.
Absolutely. Well, again, I was trained by a gentleman who most of your listeners won't know, a man called Billy Marsh.
Oh,
who
was legend.
Yeah, absolute legend. And I was the last one to be to be trained. I went on a train from Manchester, a northern boy, and everybody thought I was an idiot. I went on a day return and could hardly afford it. Met this man who eventually, after God, 3 or 4 weeks, phoned me at my mother's where I live, with mum and dad, and gave me a job. And I was trained by one of the old-fashioned greats. And I've only ever represented people that I like and I get. And business has been the secondary thing. Yep. The first thing has been liking people, and it's always important. That's why I'm still the vice chair of the Royal Variety, and was very grateful to sit in the Royal Box last year with William and Kate. It's a joy of the business, and I'm very lucky. Mm-hmm. I'm an ordinary boy from the north of England who went, like most of us, from a council estate to you know, a secondary modern school. Wasn't very clever at school, and I'm very grateful and lucky, and I enjoy people like Errol, who cracked it through a talent. I love talented people.
We've lost so many people lately in the industry, which is really, really, really sad.
Absolutely.
Tell me, apart from your friendship with him, what are you going to miss about him?
I kind of have to start with that, Peter. I have to start with the friendship, not the business. He would make me laugh. I would phone him and say to him, listen, Errol, I know you've, for instance, recently, I know you've retired. There was a huge perfume company from Paris, who I won't name, who offered him so much money to do a gig, to play three tracks, literally three tracks. And I said, Errol, you've got to look at this. And he said, let me think about it. And it took about a week, and I'm pushing, I know he's not going to do it. And in the end, he said, Phil, I don't want to do it. I said, why don't you want to do it, Errol? It's an amazing amount of money. And he said, I don't want to do it because I feel like I'm doing it for the wrong reason. And I get that. I get it. I'm not going to have done it on the mercenary thing. Listen, let's be honest, here's a manager talking. On the commission, I'd love him to do it, but I totally respect it. Yeah. I totally respect it, and I got it. And I had great joy in phoning this Parisian perfume company, albeit via New York ad agency, to say, look, he thanks you and please, but he's not going to do it.
Phil, where will he be laid to rest?
In the Bahamas, because it became his... Listen, born in Jamaica... Spent all of his career in the UK, but he kind of found happiness in... Well, he was always happy. I retract that. But he found comfort in the Bahamas, and that's where his family, his two daughters and his wife is. He'll be rested there so they can visit him.
Are his daughters into music? Are we going to hear anything from them?
I honestly don't know. One of the younger ones was, but it's kind of... Because it was unexpected, yes, he'd been poorly, but not like this. I didn't expect this, so I honestly don't know, Peter. I honestly don't know.
Phil, thank you so much. I know it's been incredibly painful. I know you people have been ringing from all over the world. We're going to say goodbye and then take a break, and we're going to play it started with a kiss and then You Sexy Thing. Got to play those two.
Thank you very much, Peter.
What do you, to finish off... What do you want people out there? And, you know, it's the biggest phone-in outside London. There are hundreds of thousands of people listening. What do you want them to think of when they think of Errol Brown?
I just want them to think of whatever the particular song that he sang meant to them, if it meant anything. But if it did, just to remember it. Because what Errol said to me ages and ages and ages ago is that if I leave anything, I'd love to leave some happiness in one of my songs. And people find songs through different meanings. They're not always they're written with a certain frame of mind, but people find them with different meanings, or whatever the meaning is. If it clicks, enjoy it. Because if Errol's left anything, and this is what his wife Jeanette said, is his legacy's got to be his songs.
When I think of him, I can see him now. He hardly moved, but he was so sexy the way he did it. It was a simplistic performance.
Yes.
But the songs sold themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. God bless him.
Thanks, Phil Dale.
Thank you, Peter.
That's Phil Dale. Friend, real friend, a proper friend, a true friend and manager of Errol Brown.